The lectionary does some strange things in this in our Old Testament readings for the last couple of weeks, and it sort of skips over a bunch of the important parts of the story of Joseph, which I think is well enough known for most of us that we don't really need them, but I found it interesting, and I kept coming back to our Old Testament lesson where Joseph finally reveals himself to his attendants. Now, reveals himself to his brothers. And if what immediately precedes this has slipped your mind, as a brief review, the famine has come that Joseph has prophesied to Pharaoh, and everybody's running out of food in that part of the world, and so Joseph's brothers come, buy some food, plays some nasty practical jokes on them, sends them back, they come back again. And so this is the point where Joseph finally can't stand tormenting his brothers anymore, because there's no other word for it other than that, and finally reveals himself. Another thing to keep in mind, just in case the time frame has escaped us, is that this is right around 20 years since Joseph's brothers had had enough of this loudmouth and had thrown him in a pit and then sold him into slavery. And I was thinking of this story, and we occasionally ask ourselves the sort of rhetorical question, why is this or that in the Bible? Because sometimes it's not as instantly applicable as anything. And that part of it is, I think, some of the things in the Bible are there to remind us that everyone is a human being and that we should stop taking our biblical heroes and putting them on a pedestal that no human being could ever really survive on. But there's more to this section of the story of Joseph than just a fascinating story of family dynamics that are really quite extraordinarily odd and make a lot of our own family problems look not quite as challenging. Although, if you've talked to anybody who has two kids and you listen to them talking about the challenges they have, and then talk to somebody who has three, and then talk to somebody who has four, and sort of go on like that, you realize that with children, there's an exponential increase in challenges the more you have. And I suspect it's probably the same. I don't know any polygamists, so I don't know if it's the same when you start adding multiple spouses in there. But, when you've got multiple wives and multiple children, the possibility for complex challenges, I think, goes right through the roof. So we probably shouldn't be too surprised that there were some difficulties here. But much as I might have wanted to, I did never throw any of my brothers into a pit. The lack of pits may have had more to do with that than desire. And I know for sure it never crossed my mind to sell them into slavery. So we look at this story and we can take a lot from it, to be sure, just on how completely human everyone in the Bible is that God works through. And so when we look at ourselves and go, well, God couldn't work through us because we have a problem with this or we're not good at that, it's good for us to remember that, no, we're human just like everybody else is. And we only see the highlights and sometimes the lowlights in the biblical stories. And so with all of that in mind, I suddenly realized that, no, there's a lot in here that is for us, not so much in the interaction with Joseph and his brothers, but more why it happened, or the larger picture of what this meant. And that's where the sermon title comes from. Well, that was unexpected. And this is one of these things that you run across now and then. It's almost I don't know if it's a meme yet in the internet way, but that was unexpected. You hear that a lot. And people, it's a way of sort of putting an ironic twist on a surprise or something like that. And when I first thought about it, I said, well, I'm guessing that Joseph's brothers didn't turn to each other with an arched eyebrow and say, well, that was unexpected when Joseph revealed himself to who he was. I think it was a little more significant than that. And so I think that that's a bit of an understatement. But imagine what that must have been like, just for a moment. Joseph's brothers, to whatever extent they thought of him in those intervening 20 years, I can't really imagine what it would be like, but I expect that there would be still some lingering irritation and dislike for him, because he was, he did not choose his words well when he interacted with his family, and he hurt their feelings and was a bit of a know-it-all and all that goes with that. But I'm sure there was a lot of guilt, if nothing else, for what they'd done to their father, because everything indicates that he never really recovered from his understanding that his son had been killed. And at least at some level, some worry about the moral implications of this and what it might hold for them and all of that. But I'm guessing after 20 years, they probably didn't think of him often. When I think of people who, well, I didn't throw them in a pit and sell them into slavery, but people who are gone, either, you know, they died or they moved out of my life. After 20 years, even if they were really significant, I don't think of them terribly often. And so imagine for a moment that one of those people in your own life that has just disappeared 20 years ago, who was important at that point, you were friends, you were, you know, you worked together, whatever it was, then suddenly appears again. And I can't imagine too many things that would be more unexpected, particularly here. I mean, the last time they saw Joseph, he was on his way to slavery, which, well, it might not have been exactly the same as whatever our sort of movie-informed or television-informed ideas of slavery are, still wasn't very pleasant. So if they were ever expecting to see him again, I don't think it was where they were and where he was. And so suddenly he reveals himself. And it says in yet more, well, maybe it's not understatement, but I think it probably is. It says, but his brothers were not able to answer him after he asked the question, is my father still living? Because they were terrified at his presence. Which only makes sense. People, us, all human beings, we tend to interpret the actions of others through our own way of doing things. And these are people who, because they didn't like their brother's dreams, threw him in a pit and sold him into slavery. So I'm guessing that their feeling is that if the situation was reversed, you're about to be put to death in some particularly unpleasant way. So I can see why they would be terrified. I mean, they don't have this sense that sort of grace is part of their lives particularly. And then Joseph says, no, don't be distressed. And this I find just a fascinating statement. Do not be angry with yourselves for selling me here. And I think Joseph gets to the heart of something. That after 20 years, hardly anybody stays the same. And I suspect that Joseph's brothers, if the situation was exactly the same 20 years on, they wouldn't have thrown him in a pit. They wouldn't have sold him into slavery. When he showed up, they would have gone, oh, here's Joseph that just hasn't learned how to control his tongue yet. Let's just listen to him yap away and then we'll do whatever we need to. Because with age comes that ability to let people be themselves. And I think Joseph might have been onto something here. That with that lingering guilt and with the worry about this, I wonder how frequently his brothers had beaten themselves up for what they'd done to their parents. And to Joseph as well, although I'm sure he sort of faded into the distance, but they saw their father on a regular basis, maybe even every day. I don't know what farming practices were like back then, but they saw him regularly. And so Joseph's first words are to reassure them that they shouldn't be angry with themselves, because it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you. And this is the second part of that. Well, that was unexpected. Sermon title comes from. God is all about turning up in unexpected ways. And for most of us, if we were going to be in the position of preserving, well, basically the Middle East from famine, I don't think we would have gone about it the way God did. Well, I'm pretty sure I wouldn't have. I don't want to speak for you. But here you have someone sold into slavery, rises to a position of responsibility in a household, is unjustly accused, is thrown into jail, is now reached the pinnacle of power in Egypt, which at that time was probably the superpower of the world. I mean, he can't get any higher as a non-Egyptian person. Like he can't. And depending on the translation you use, Joseph refers to himself as Pharaoh's father. You know, like, so he's everything that the Pharaoh needs. I mean, how much further can you get than that? God took something that was unequivocally awful, taking one of your siblings, throwing them in a dry well, and selling them into slavery is unequivocally awful. There is no upside to that, with the slight possibility that I guess it's better than killing him. But if those are the only two options for interacting with one of your brothers or sisters, I think we can safely say you have hit the bottom. You know, you can't go any lower than that. And so God took something that was as awful as that and turned it into the salvation of millions of people. Millions of people. And if we were so inclined, I'm sure we could have a lengthy discussion about an omniscient God who knows all things, who knows the end from the beginning and the beginning from the end, that he could have could have worked this through in other ways. And of course he could have. But what God does here is, through this whole process, he allows people to make the choices that they want to make. Bad choices, often. Really bad choices. Joseph's brothers made a bad choice. Well, Joseph's father made a bad choice in singling out one of his children, so obviously as the favorite. Potiphar's wife made a bad choice. Potiphar made a bad choice. All kinds of bad choices all through here. And if at any stage up until Joseph's elevation, you look at the story of Joseph, you think this is just a tragedy. It's just terrible. Someone whose only evil, as far as we can tell, is that he was immature, ends up in jail, in pits, in slavery, and all of these horrible things. Where could there possibly be good from this? And how could we imagine good coming from this when Joseph is in jail? Well, God saw. And God intervened in ways that still respect and honor the volitional nature of us as human beings. Where Pharaoh saw the gifts that Joseph had and chose to honor those. And through this very strange set of circumstances and experiences that nobody would choose, good things came. And when I look at the story of Joseph, I find myself looking at my own life and the lives of those around me. I've never known anyone who's gone from the bottom to the top quite to this extent. I don't even think it's possible anymore. I mean, you can go from almost nothing to a lot, but I'm not quite sure you can go from that, because we don't have kings and pharaohs quite the same way. But we do have stories of people who have gone from the depths to the heights. That people who have looked at experiences that we think would have destroyed us and have turned them into something good. And then every once in a while, someone will hold up that mirror to us, or their discussion of what they think of us helps us see ourselves in a different light. And every once in a while, we're given that great gift of looking back at something that we never would have chosen, something that was unequivocally awful, and see that from that seed has grown something glorious. Heather and I lost our first baby. We never got to meet Elizabeth. It was a pregnancy loss. Lots of people told us it really didn't matter because we never met her. Well, she wasn't far enough along for us to even know for sure it was a girl. We just both felt it was, and that was good enough for us. And so when we had our memorial service for her, which many people thought was a little excessive, it was for Elizabeth Amy Johanna Holzleiner. That was unequivocally awful. That was the worst day of my life, and I don't think anything will ever catch up with it. I just don't. And I look at what has come from that, something I never would have chosen, And there's just something about human beings. When we go through something really unpleasant or something extraordinary, and we do our best to make it fit into all the complexity of our lives, one of the things that I've found and that other people have told me about is you somehow radiate something. I don't know what it is. But people who need to hear from someone who's gone through that somehow know you're one of those people. I know that's a terrible sentence construction, but what it is, like when Heather and I first, like the ironies of Elizabeth not making it after a couple of years of infertility treatment made it even worse. But we were fairly open about infertility problems, and we didn't hide the fact that we'd lost a baby. But people that probably wouldn't have known that seem to be drawn to us to talk about how challenging infertility can be and how terrible it is to lose a baby when people think that it's just one of those things that happens. And I don't want to judge the people who looked at it as one of those things that happened. They're not crippled emotionally. They're just different. But for the people that it was a catastrophe, that it was the worst day in their life, they needed somebody who said, yeah, it is. And we somehow became those people for other couples. That was unexpected. I didn't want that to happen, and I wouldn't have chosen it. I know myself well enough that if the Holy Spirit would have appeared to me and said, by the way, I'm going to give you the worst day of your life, but you'll be able to minister to people out of it. Aren't you happy? I would have said, no, I'm not. I don't want that. That's not for me. That I'm grateful I wasn't given that choice. And for a number of the things in my life that I never would have chosen, that were just difficult, awful, that nobody ever looks at them and says, well, you're lucky you went through that. There's lots of those that have made me into a kind of person who is more compassionate, who is more patient, who understands better, and is so much less likely to give you some kind of glib answer that just makes things worse. I'm glad nobody ever said out loud, at least, to me, worse yet to Heather, some of those things that we say, trying to make people feel better, that, well, you know, God needed her more than you did. You know, and I just think, I know what you're trying to do. I would have just walked away. I think Heather would have punched somebody who said that. And if she wanted to punch him again, I might have held them. You know, because you understand that. People are trying to, they're not being cruel, or they're not trying to be cruel, but they are. There's no way on earth I'm ever going to say something like that because of what I went through. But I could have before. I'm one of these people who likes to fix things and thinks he knows a lot, and, well, I do know a lot, but thinks he knows more than he does. And I'm very capable of saying things that are foolish. But I'm less likely to because of that. And that being less likely means that I'm more capable of being an instrument of grace in people's lives. And this is the way it is for all of us. We're not Joseph in the sense that we are somehow unexpectedly going to be running a country. But we're going to be Joseph in the sense that God is going to take some of those things that we would never have chosen, and even some of those that we would have if we would have thought to. But God is going to take those things in our lives and turn them into something that's good. God just does that. I don't know how, but I'm sure glad he does. We all have the opportunity, at least now and then, to look at the things of our lives, things that we never would have chosen, things that nobody would have chosen for us, and look at their outcomes and say, well, that was unexpected. When Elizabeth died, I just assumed I would. I'd never been hurt that badly in my entire life. And for days and days and days after, I had no idea how I woke up in the morning. That was my response to it. It's not everybody's, and no one's is wrong. It's how you respond as a well-rounded whole human being. But I look back at the number of times that I have been an instrument of God's grace and mercy in the lives of others. It came from that. And I say, well, I never would have expected that. It's easy for us to look at those things in our lives that are that bad and simply put them in the "this was bad" period category. And I have great sympathy for anyone who does that when they're that bad. But I would really encourage us, all of us, to look back just as an opportunity to encourage ourselves at where God has taken those and brought beautiful things from them. And to look at what we're going through now, or we will go through, that once again we never would have chosen, and be aware that God might bring beautiful things out of that also. That doesn't mean that we say they're good, because those things aren't good. They're never good. But the beauty and grace that God brings from them is good. It's hard to hold those two things together. It really is. But it's worth doing it. To say that this thing I never would have chosen has brought such glory to God, has brought such comfort to others. I don't think Joseph ever enjoyed being a slave. But I think if you asked him on balance, was it worth it, he would have said yes. And it's taken me a long time to get to this stage. But on balance, I'd say it's been worth it. You might not be at that stage in whatever you're thinking of, and that's okay. Joseph had 20 years to get ready for this. Let's not rush these things. God's not in a hurry, so we shouldn't be either. But let's be alert to those opportunities where we can use what has gone on in our lives that we never would have chosen in ways that bring glory to God and comfort to people. And it's okay to go, well, that was unexpected.